It's that time where you get to hear a lot from me. Some of us call it sermon time. I call it a wonderful conversation starter. And so I'll admit that in preparing for this sermon, I stumbled into a theological messiness that I neither predicted nor adequately prepared for. And I should have expected some tension as I tried to mine a singularly coherent wisdom dually located in Christianity and in Buddhism. But I did not. And this is where we find ourselves this morning as I try to preach the inherent conflicts between the two and the wisdom that is in both of them. The wisdom we're going to talk about today is that of letting go and letting God, as well as the practice of non-detachment. And I pray that we find a workable meaning together. We'll find out at the end, won't we? So let go and let God is a phrase that comes to us from Keswick theology, which originated in England in the mid-19th century. Early Keswick theology and its contemporary expressions encourage Christians to know the will of God by practicing total surrender to the divine. This form of surrender is called passivity, rightly so. And it allows practitioners to rest in the spirit of the divine and to be carried along by divine will. Now, interestingly enough, critiques of passivity come most strongly from evangelical Christian thought. And in that branch of thought, Canadian Christian theologian James N.L. Packer, J.I. Packer, offers an analysis. In the 2005 republication of his 1984 work, Keep in Step with the Spirit, Finding Fullness in Our Walk with God, Packer writes, "The point is plain. Passivity, which quietists think liberates the spirit, actually resists and quenches him. Souls that cultivate passivity do not thrive, but waste away. The Christian's motto should not be, let go and let God, but trust God and get going." The other primary critique of let go and let God is that the statement is not grounded in the writings of Christian Bible, and therefore not a sound basis for Christian doctrine. So with all of this in mind, trust God and get going, as Packer puts it, is what I thought let go and let God meant. That by trusting the divine, which I define as trusting the experiences that draw us together for justice. Trusting the divine is trusting the experiences which draw us together for justice. And by moving forward out of this space of justice, we lessen our burdens and commit to a future united in community. And so the practice of non-attachment, which some philosophies also call detachment. I'm making a distinction here. Sometimes you'll hear non-attachment and detachment used similarly. If you're in a tradition or a philosophy that calls them the same thing, let them be the same thing. I make a distinction in this sermon. It holds a similar insight for us about trust. So while non-attachment finds its roots in many of the spiritual traditions originating in Asia and in the subcontinent of India, my awareness of non-attachment comes from Buddhism. And non-attachment presents a third pathway from either attachment or detachment. Because Buddhism conceives of attachment to outcomes, that's important. We're talking about attachment to outcomes, not necessarily attachment to things. That's a different form of attachment that Buddhism also deals with. That attachment to outcomes is something to be avoided because it keeps us concerned with earthly issues, which can prevent us from reaching spiritual enlightenment. And especially when we're attached to outcomes we cannot control, such as the progression of someone's illness, how much someone respects us or shows us respect, or our emotional responses to a given situation, then the failure of those outcomes to live up to our expectations, that can cause suffering. The flip side of attachment is detachment, which can cause some similar suffering because when we fail to prepare emotionally or physically for an outcome that is likely, the recognition that we could have done something to be more prepared can be quite severe. So non-attachment to outcomes is the realization that we cannot control our outcomes. And since we cannot control our outcomes, our responses to those outcomes don't necessarily have to reflect the outcome itself. Does that make sense? So if something sad happens, I don't have to be sad that it happened. It gives us space. And so when we practice this non-attachment to outcomes, we can give ourselves necessary space when we're confronted with adversity. We can replenish our reserves when we spark joy. And we can maintain focus when the results of our actions are neither entirely positive nor entirely negative. Non-attachment to outcomes can also help us to trust God and get going. In a similar way, non-attachment can also help us focus on the most foundational element of being in community, and that is trust itself. Before we can even begin to make promises, to agree with one another, or get going to reach our shared goals, we must trust one another. Now, in our contemporary Unitarian Universalist theological framework, we underscore that each and every person has access to the divine. It's right here, or maybe right in between us, but we all have access, right? We also frame that we all have access to the revelation, to the knowing that happens when we have a direct relationship with the divine. And so in that way, trusting one another, because we all have a little piece of the truth, is one of the most practical ways that we can be Unitarian Universalists. Now, I don't mean practical as in realistic, I mean practical as in practicing. It is one of the ways that we can move our faith to action most easily, is by trusting one another, through puzzling together the pieces of the truth that each one of us has. We learn more about the nature of the divine, or maybe even if there is a divine. Trust is necessary for promise-making and agreement because it is the very foundation of relationship. Promise-making and agreement are not necessary for relationship and community building insofar as they exist among themselves, but they're actually the tools that we use to build community in the first place. And whereas community is essential for the full practice of Unitarian Universalism, our shared faith teaches us that we know the most about the divine when we share what we know with one another. And so, let us turn to your additional naming practice. And I'm going to invite your covenant of good relations to come down on the screen now. This is an example of you trusting the divine so that you might move forward together. And while you're already on your way with this dialogue, you have understood for some time that it is your relationships based on trust and mutual caring that will sustain your community during a period of discernment. In your covenant, you have clarified your shared values thus, and I paraphrase, it's in full measure up here. You have clarified that you are to have open hearts and minds for those whose experiences differ from your own, that you are a community that engages in deep listening and respect for all to share their truth respectfully. You share as a value the gifts of being in multi-generational community, as well as of making decisions together. And you have made these following promises to one another, again, paraphrasing, not in its entirety. to speak honestly and directly to the persons with whom you have a concern, using thoughtful, compassionate language. To forgive the errors and shortcomings of yourself and others as we contribute to our shared ministry and express gratitude for the many gifts we bring. You have promised to listen deeply to and actively seek resolution with those concerned when you are in conflict. You have promised to expect divergent beliefs and opinions and persist in respectful dialogue, especially in times of uncertainty, remaining open to new understandings while doing your part to sustain this covenant. And this next part's an important one. You've promised to respect the minister and staff's professionalism, their time, as well as their privacy. And you conclude that it is your intention to foster healthy and productive relations within our church community as we work together to achieve our mission. As you hear or read these once again, which of your promises or values jump out to you? You can yell it out.
Assume good intention.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Expect diversity.
Mm-hmm. What else? Assume responsibility. What else?
Respect.
Respect. That shows up a lot. What else?
Generations.
Yes. Yes. The work we do is not for us alone. It's for generations who will never know us but benefit from the work we did. These values and promises are what you have said help you trust that each one of you is making decisions faithfully. That on this foundation, you can trust the divine and get going toward your shared goals. With these values and promises, you have already laid the groundwork for non-attachment to outcomes. You all already understand that whether or not you include an additional name is less important than the deepening and widening of community that result from this discernment process.
Amen.
And you have 3 suggestions that are due by next week. Together, you are learning and you are leaning into one of the greatest practices of our shared faith to remain in community, especially when it is complicated, difficult, or when everyone doesn't agree on how to move forward. You have already laid the foundation to do this. So here at the beginning of your discernment, remember to practice being who you said you want to be together. You said you want to be a community that listens and cares for one another with respect, compassion, and forgiveness. We all mess up sometimes, and believe me, I'm not one for easy forgiveness. But practicing a spirit of forgiveness is one way to move forward together in trust and compassion. How we believe together as Unitarian Universalists informs our understanding of trusting the divine requires that we trust one another. To be Unitarian Universalist is to understand that to trust the divine requires that we trust one another. Our shared beliefs also redouble our understanding that the best way to move forward in life is by working together in community for shared goals. Because both trusting God and getting going and practicing non-attachment to outcomes in our faith context require exactly the foundation of trust that you have already articulated in your covenant of good relations. Where the divine leads you, that is where you decide to go together, that's unknown, but how you get there, it must rest on trust. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
It must rest on trust. You cannot do the rest of the thing unless you trust one another, unless you are being vulnerable with one another, unless you are sharing freely with one another. And how you trust one another is also key to moving toward your shared imaginings of how this spiritual community and the world of which it is a part can and should be. Collective decision-making and discernment require that you actively and frequently check in about how deeply you trust one another, because that is the only evidence that each of you has that you are all sharing freely the peace of the truth, the knowledge of the divine that lies within you. And so I ask that you stay true to who you want to be together. Stay true to whom you have said you will be together. Stay true to the promises and agreements you make, because you will make more trustworthy decisions this way. Amen, and blessed be.